Hello, everybody. Welcome to Guys Five Movies. This is one of your co-hosts, Chris Gasper.
This is Frank Pellicone.
You are listening to episode 111 of The Spin Chagrin, and last week's category was Chris is a bitch. Because Frank's mean. So, Frank, what did you come up with for Chris is a bitch?
So, this was like really the biggest part of the journey was how do I approach such an open-ended, you know, like category. My initial thought was I was going to find movies that had actors or directors named Chris that I don't like and watch them.
Who would that include?
I have no idea. That was the problem. Like, I couldn't think of any, like, immediate Chris's that I have, like, a lot of animosity for. So, and that felt like a lot of work to, like, just go through and find. 12 Bite might not even be, like, that interesting of a list anyway.
Right.
So then I decided, what if I watch movies that I'm pretty sure you would hate, but that I might actually enjoy? So I took it as, like, being, like, you're the bitch because you can't enjoy these movies. And then you got a bonus third and fourth movie. One of which I think, both of which I think you would hate, but I don't think you're a bitch for hating them. But there's two movies that I watched that I really think you would not enjoy, that I actually got a lot of enjoyment out of. So you might want to watch them just to prove me wrong, I guess, at some point.
Okay.
So, one of them I had Orion watch because I thought that he would love it and he really enjoyed it too. And then, one of them I told him would be a surprise tonight that when he listens to the podcast, he can hear about it. So,
okay.
So the first movie we're going to talk about is the one that I told him to watch, which is, 1983, I think. Yeah, 83. Post-apocalyptic sci-fi action movie called Endgame. If you look up the VHS cover art for Endgame, it looks like some kind of crazy, like, gladiatorial combat in the future type thing. That's kind of what happens.
Looks like an NES, like, cover.
Yeah, it doesn't. That cover doesn't represent, like, what the movie is like at all.
Bless you.
Thank you. It's actually kind of structured like an NES game in some ways. So, so in the future, there's this, who was the Roman, emperor that decided to do the gladiatorial games as opposed to like fixing things in Rome to kind of distract people? Was that Nero? Maybe.
Commodus or something like that.
So anyway, so that's pretty much what's happened in the future. This movie takes place in the far away time period of 2025, where it's been presumably 20-ish years since the last nuclear war, which has kind of like destroyed a lot of the cities and created these vast wastelands. So there's this game. So first of all, there's these people that are mutants that exist that have like psychic powers beyond human comprehension.
Okay.
And everybody hates the mutants. And then the normal people, they're addicted to this annual game show, which is basically The Running Man, like the movie The Running Man. Where there's a guy who is challenging against these other competitors and they're trying to hunt him and kill him, and he has to either kill them or survive X amount of time, and if he survives for a certain amount of time then it's considered a draw and they split like the prize money. But if he kills every one of them he kills, he's increasing the prize money that he gets if he's the one that wins in the end. So so this guy, Shannon, of all names, is, he's been doing it for 22 years, and he's, like, the best around, and so this year he's gonna be the prey and let these other people come and hunt him. So there's a guy, I can't remember his name, but there's a guy who's, like, a pretty racist, like, caricature of, like, a Zulu warrior, kind of. Then there's another dude who's, I can't even, he looks like old Rod Stewart, but he's,
Rod Stewart looks like old Rod Stewart mostly.
I know, so imagine. He is, a karate master, kind of, like, master of the martial arts. And then there's this dude, Karnak, who used to, who I guess was partners with Shannon at one point, and is the only person they fought each other to a draw once in Endgame, which is the name of this, like, competition. So Karn, everyone's like, yeah, I'm gonna kill you. So they wander off, and the whole thing is them, like, stalking Shannon through this post-apocalyptic city. Which, did I make you watch a movie called, like, Dagger of Ice or something like that?
Dagger of Ice rings no bells.
I can't remember exactly what it was called, but it was a, it's a giallo. And part of the movie takes place in, like, this underground, like, under a bridge area where all these homeless people live. And I think this is exactly where this is filmed, is in this exact same spot, because it looked, like, super familiar to me. But anyway, so Shannon takes down the first two. He bests the Zulu warrior guy in, like, hand-to-hand combat, and then he ends up, like, outsmarting and, like, outfighting the martial artist guy. But then Laura Gemser, do you know who that is? Or Gesmer?
I can't remember her name.
She's a B actress from the 70s and 80s. She was in a lot of, like, erotic films, like Cinemax style.
Oh, yeah. She's in, like, a lot of the Emmanuel movies.
Yeah, she was Emmanuel for a long time. Anyway, so she plays, like, this psychic mutant called Lilith. And she's dressed like a fucking tampon, kind of. Like, that's what she looks like. It's just, I don't know, like, wrapped in fucking linens or whatever. But she psychically warns Shannon that Karnak has a trap set for him, and there's no way he can escape it except that she'll, like, help him escape. So she does, and he finds out that she wants him to escort her and some other mutants along with this scientist across the wasteland, and the prize for that is, like, 200 gold pieces or something like that, because in 2025, we've gone back to gold just being the thing that we use as currency. So you got that to look forward to in, you know, like, a year. So he agrees, but he's going to assemble this team of people to help him out. So he goes and collects these people. Like, there's a guy called the Ninja who, you know, he's a ninja. And there's this big guy, this big burly, like, bearded dude who is super strong and, like, a good fighter. And there's another guy who's, like, has the best reflexes ever. Like, he's, like, basically unbeatable in terms of, like, his reflexes. And then another guy who's, like, a great, like, driver who's going to help them, like, drive. So anyway, so he's got his team together. And they're escorting these mutants. But they don't tell anybody that they're mutants because everybody hates mutants. And the other subplot here is that the government is trying to wipe all the mutants out. So Shannon's trying to get them away from the government. So this is, like, 30 minutes into the movie is where, like, we've gotten all these things together. Okay. And the rest of the movie is him, like, taking them across the country. So, oh, Karnak also agrees to go with him. But you find out in, like, a side scene that Karnak, because at the end of Endgame, Shannon didn't kill Karnak. He spared his life. And so Karnak, like, doesn't like the fact that, you know, I guess he took pity on him or whatever. And so he wants to get his revenge. So he's going with him too. But he ends up being, like, super helpful. So I don't know, whatever. So the first thing they face is there's this village of, like, monks, basically. And they're being all weird. And you find out that they're blind. But then, they attack and they can see. And the reason they can see is because they have a mutant kid, like, chained up in this like desolated apartment building. And that mutant kid is using his mutant ability to be their eyes. So he's basically, even though he's chained up in a house, they're seeing, I don't know.
They're seeing through his eyes?
Yeah, except that his eyes are only seeing himself chained up in this house. So I'm not exactly sure
how this power works.
Yeah, they kind of explained, like, sort of like halfway explained.
Are they drawing energy from his eyes?
Maybe.
His mutant eyes?
Or, like, he can use their useless eyes to see, and then, therefore, he can just make them all. Anyway, so fuck it. So, Lilith, who's the Laura Gesmer lady, she figures out that this is what's happening. She tells Shannon, and this fucking battle goes on forever. There's like 1,000 of these fucking rogue dudes just like attacking them. So he goes into the apartment where they are, and he ends up throwing like a hatchet into the kid's head and killing him. And now all of a sudden, all the monks are blind again. So Orion asked, like, after the movie, he had the question, couldn't Shannon have, like, saved that kid? Like, there was no reason to kill him. But I think that in, like, in the essence of, like, expediency, like, trying to, like, get out of there, I think you pretty much had to, like, murder the kid. Like, there was no way that you could have, like, because as long as it was happening, all the fucking monks could see, so just killing him, it just ended the fight right away. So I thought that was actually, like, the smart thing to do. So then they're on the road again, and they get to this place where there's, like, this, like, half-naked woman is chained up, and, they stop to, like, help her, and Lilith runs out of the van, and she's like, no, it's a trap. So they end up, all the people find out that Lilith is a mutant, so they don't want to, like, participate anymore. Like, the big burly guy especially, he doesn't want to do it. So they end up getting attacked by, like, these mutants on, like, BMX bikes, and in, it's like the typical sci-fi post-apocalyptic where they've just taken, like, run-down old cars and taken the doors off to make them look futuristic or whatever.
Sure.
Because in the future, nobody needs doors.
Yes.
Because
you're too busy, like, hanging out of them and shooting and shit.
Yeah, it's true. So Lilith gets kidnapped, by this blue fish dude. Orion called him Blue Karnov, but to me, he looked more like Merman's, like, more human brother or something like that. So Ninja gets killed, and the big burly dude gets captured, and the guy with the really good reflexes gets killed. And so the driver dude has, like, all the rest of the mutants left because they only wanted Lilith. So Karnak is like, all right, I'll go with you, Shannon. We'll rescue the girl. So they all go to where, because she's given him, like, psychic impressions of where she is. Mm. So they're all going to go to, like, the mutant hideout. And in the meantime, fucking Blue Merman guy, he rapes her. And she doesn't let Shannon know she's being raped, I guess, because, I don't know, she's trying to protect his feelings because she's, like, falling in love with him or whatever.
Okay.
Save him.
Okay.
Then at the end, like, they take him to the place where the gold is, and it turns out that the army's there. Oh, so there's this subplot where there's this young mutant kid who's basically Luke Skywalker. Like, I was telling Orion, because the soundtrack they use in this movie is also very similar to the Imperial March at points.
Hmm.
It's, like, almost, like, inspired by it. So it almost feels like a Star Wars prequel. Like, if you would have had this instead of Episode 1, it would have been a much better, like, start to, because you could have introduced Anakin this way. So basically, there's a kid that's Anakin Skywalker, and he can, like, levitate things with his mind. So the government comes to, like, kill the mutants, and little Luke Skywalker, like, blows them all up with the power of his mind. So then the people that want to save the mutants are there, and they rescue him. Lilith wants Shannon to come with her, but he's like, no. Oh, so I'm sorry. So when they were rescuing her from the mutants, in the mutant hideout, Karnak got trapped because like the rope they climbed up like broke or whatever. So you think that he's dead, but then after Shannon declines to go with the mutants because he says, "I'm a man from another time" or something like that, Karnak comes back and basically challenges Shannon to like one last like duel of Mortal Kombat, and that's where it ends, is them like screaming and charging at each other on a freeze frame.
So you don't get any resolution of that?
Well, no, I mean, but I actually kind of like that because it's like these guys that were the two greatest warriors of their time. And they, you know, like, it doesn't really matter who the best is. Because they're both just like these antiques from like a pre, like, you know. Because the mutants are the future. I don't know, man. Whatever.
I got you. Okay.
So, I didn't really do a good job of like saying how awesome this movie is. This movie is actually pretty awesome. Number one, like, it's much better written than most movies of its ilk. Like, there's some actual really, like, good dialogue, and the plot is pretty interesting, and I mean, because there's always, like, we've watched plenty of movies, well, myself, where it's, like, some great warrior who's kind of, like, fallen on hard times, or used to be, like, some really good soldier for the government but is like left, there's always like them transporting some person across some wasteland or whatever. They got to save the water, they got to save the sun, or they got to save these people from being like breeding slaves or something. That's like the more like, I don't know, scandalous ones. But I don't know, like the backdrop of kind of like the Running Man style game is really cool. They really spend a lot of time like making the mutants, like they do have like fish scales and weird skin and monkey faces and stuff, and sometimes the mutants just have their boobs out if they're a girl, like I guess that's like part of it, but
just how you do when you're a female.
Yeah, I know, when you're a mutant, right? I mean, that's your mutant thing, you can't keep a shirt on me. But yeah, I thought it was really good, like for a movie that I've never seen before, and it's always kind of surprising to me that I continuously find these fucking like low budget movies that I've just never seen. Yeah, like there's the thing where Shannon's talking about like combat with somebody, and the guy says that's a responsibility soldiers carried on their shoulders when conflict was solved by war. And there's another time where they're like, they come across a bunch of mutant corpses, and there's a scientist. That's the guy that wants to save save all the mutants. Like, he's the one that's, like, getting them across the desert. Talks about how, like, those mutants are a sign of involution, where man is retracing his steps backwards. That's why they look like fish and monkeys and stuff like that. So, I don't know. So there's some good ideas in it. So, pretty entertaining. It's on Tubi. I would say it's worth watching if you enjoy like sci-fi movies. It feels like what you would have described as a Larry Gasparri movie to me. So I just feel like you might
Hate it.
Yeah, but I think that's because you're a bitch, and I think that it's a really good movie, and that you should. Anyway, so then the next movie I watched is called Iron Warrior. I always get this wrong because it's the stupidest title. Yeah, Iron Warrior. And Iron Warrior is the third in the Ator Fighting Eagle series of movies. If you're familiar, do you know Ator, the Fighting Eagle?
No.
So Ator is basically I think it's Ator. A-T-O-R is how you spell his name.
Okay.
Is a Conan ripoff from the early to mid-80s. The first movie is pretty decent. It's directed by Joe D'Amato. If you know who that is, the first two movies. So then this third movie.
Oh, well, the Endgame was too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So the third movie is directed by some other dude and completely like different in terms of the plot, even though there's not like a whole lot connecting the Ator movies, but it just kind of uses that character as more or less just, it's like Conan or something. I think actually it was written as a third Conan movie, but then they couldn't get the rights to Conan because De Laurentiis still had it, so they just made it an Ator movie, because who fucking cares about him? I don't know if I can go into how fucking convoluted this movie is or how much it just steals from. I made a really brief list as I was watching it. So it steals from Star Wars, Willow, Indiana Jones, Clash of the Titans, Crawl, Masters of the Universe, for various ways. Like, there's the bad guy is a evil sorceress named Phaedra. She's got, like, these minions that work for her that are basically Jawas. Or, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the tall man's little Jawa man.
Right.
From Phantasm. Like, that's kind of what they were like.
Mm-hmm.
The main bad guy is this dude that wears this skull mask, so he looks like General Krall all the time, like right. Willow.
Yeah, I see it. And it
looks there's like a scene where they're crossing a rope bridge, and these men that are wearing like really heavy like mask costumes or whatever start cutting the rope bridge, and they have to run back across, and then they swing on the rope bridge and end up trying to like climb up, and then they have to jump into the water below.
Are there alligators?
No, you don't really see what happens after that. They just kind of get away. There's a scene where the main actress lady, who I mind you spends the entire movie wearing like this sheer, they're different colors. She has multiple of them, but they're just these sheer dresses that like expose her boobs the entire time. Where she's running away from not one, but two boulders in a trap.
Yeah.
And Ator has
that's up in the stakes.
Yeah, I know. There's some shit that really reminded me of Clash of the Titans. I can't think specifically of like what it was, but just like the way it was filmed. I think also because I believe it was filmed in Greece. But here's the thing with this movie is number one, the dialogue is terrible. The dude that plays Ator is his whole like range of acting is him making a duck face the entire time. It looks beautiful, like it's shot perfectly, kind of like I don't know, like the cinematography is amazing in this movie. Even though like it almost never makes sense while you're watching it, like it's really enjoyable to watch. It's your standard sword and sorcery fare, which is why I think you would probably hate it.
Sure.
In general. But I don't know. Like, as much as I just kind of rolled my eyes at like the different plot twists that happen, like they're consistently being tricked by this Phaedra. She disguises herself as other people. And it's like so obvious every single time that they go into a situation that like, hey, duh, this like beautiful woman that's trying to seduce Ator or like offering you guys help is obviously like the bad guy. And once Ator figures it out, he just fucking kills her. But then in the end, you just realize that she's probably possessed the princess. So that's another cliffhanger ending, just like fucking endgame. So yeah, like I don't recommend this in the same way because I think Endgame is legitimately like an enjoyable movie and worth watching. I don't recommend this in the same way. But it's definitely like beautiful, and I think really like if you like sword and sorcery stuff, it's worth watching. So I don't know. I mean, I had two good experiences.
It happens, right?
Yeah, and then I ruined it last night.
Oh so, shit.
So
before you get into this one, what?
Yeah,
because I'm always interested in this because you sit there and will say like you like these movies and they're good, but it's like what's the chagrin like on these two? Because it's always higher than I think it's going to be.
Endgame is a 3, probably.
Uh-huh.
Only because, as much as I really enjoy it, it's still, like, there still is some silly stuff in terms of, like, the way that certain scenes are shot. I mean, it's just, like, it's just par for the course for movies of that time period. Budget, but like it does a lot with its budget, and it does a really great job, I think, of making it interesting and worth watching. But still, like, it's not like to me, for a movie to be a two or a one or whatever, it has to be almost like a classic of cinema, and I don't know that I would ever describe Endgame. I did buy it on Blu-ray, though.
Oh, okay.
I marked out so hard that
yeah,
I got it on
that's,
Blu-ray.
That's a pretty big markout.
Yeah, so I want to be able to watch it whenever I want to watch it with no commercial interruptions.
Is that something that is like kind of retail, or did you have to like get it off eBay or something?
I got it off eBay. It was only $15.
Oh, okay.
I think that's worth like a movie that I enjoy enough watching again. Hopefully it'll have commentary or some kind of like behind the scenes shit on it, because mm-hmm. I'd be interested in seeing. It's Endgame has like all these actors that if you've ever like if you watch movies from this, especially Italian horror, you'd recognize all of them. I actually forgot to talk about that part. You've seen a bunch of them.
Sure, I know who George Eastman is.
Yeah, you know George Eastman. There's a bunch of other guys too in it, like minor actors that I can't remember their names, but they're definitely like people that were in like D'Amato stuff, and
yeah,
they acted for Fulci. Like Al Kleiber is in The Beyond. He's the guy in The Beyond. So.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking at D'Amato because I recognized his name, and I was like, oh, okay, you know, whatever happened to Solange or whatever, like that he directed that. But so is he just like what's his name? Corman, kind of? Like where it's like every once in a while he has like a really great movie.
Yeah.
But he just like makes like 5 million of them.
Yeah, I think they're all like that in a way, or most of them. He just I mean, I think he's a talented dude. I think he has a good eye for framing and stuff. I think just sometimes maybe he's under constraints for time or budget. Or maybe he just doesn't have the best, you know, he's just making a movie to make money. But when he's on, he's pretty good. I mean, he's done a lot of movies I enjoy from, you know, throughout, like, whatever.
Yeah.
The 70s, the 80s.
Really prolific writer too, where other people like direct his stuff. Because I know I've seen a couple of these things. Like I'm pretty sure, like I've seen Ghost House, Stage Fright. I've seen. You made me watch that. I think so. That was on a list, maybe.
I mean, he cut his teeth like with a bunch of really like he was. A cameraman on Contempt. I actually didn't know that. Let's see when he starts directing. Oh, yeah, he did some of the Django's. He did a bunch of spaghetti westerns as a... Jesus Christ, his filmography. He was cinematographer on a bunch of spaghetti westerns for a long time.
Yeah.
All, like, ripoffs. A Barrel Full of Dollars, A Fistful of Death. Yeah, What Have You Done to Solange? I like that movie a lot. More sexy Canterbury Tales. Yeah, anyway. And then I would say that Iron Warrior is like, it's probably a... If it wasn't so beautiful, it would be a 4, or it would be a 5, but it's a 4.
Okay.
Like, it's, the plot is so silly, and there's so many, like, twists and turns, and I don't know. It's like watching, like, a Japanese RPG from, like, 1997 or something. Like, they're, oh, we gotta go to this island of the rolling boulders, and then we gotta go to this island with the, you know, whatever. They're traveling all over the place trying to, like, win this kingdom back for the princess or whatever.
That's interesting, I guess, because it's like like you like Endgame a lot more though, right?
Oh yeah, I thought Endgame was really good.
Okay.
But I didn't think that Iron Warrior was bad. I just I'm telling you, like the cinematography in that movie is what really like sells it. It's a beautiful movie to look at. And it's got some really cool like concepts in terms of its visual effects, and I think all the set design and everything is all really well done. I'm so jealous that these guys had like, because I'm sure all these places are super touristy now, but just like these ruins in Greece and Italy and whatever, they could just go and film at, where there was like nobody around, that are amazing.
Sure.
Like the end piece of Iron Warrior is basically like this big Stonehenge thing that Ator is fighting Phaedra like in front of, and where he thinks he kills her. It's pretty impressive. Like, it looks really good. In fact, in a lot of ways, it looks a lot better than something like Clash of the Titans, which it's 100% ripping off. So,
Yeah, no, it's yeah. I mean, they're all like hit and miss for me, but I mean, like, yeah, it's always like really cool to see like good ones come out of like, you know, such like kind of like low budget type stuff. It happens. I'll watch the first one. I will not watch fucking Atex or whatever the fuck.
Ator, the fighting
Eagle. Ator. Okay. I already forgot the damn name.
Iron Warrior. It's hard to remember, actually, because it's so nondescript. The Iron Warrior is also his brother. I forgot about that. Because they were separated as children. Mm. That's the opening of the movie, is them separating Ator from his brother. But then Ator just unceremoniously murders him later, so I guess it's fine.
So what's the ruination of your journey?
So last night I'm sitting here and I'm like, you know, I got time to watch another movie, and now that the time changes happen and I'm an hour ahead of Tanya, my wife, she wakes up later, so I actually have a little more time to watch stuff before she wakes up. So I decided to watch fucking Damsel, or The Damsel, on Netflix.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh.
The Millie Bobby Brown movie.
Yeah.
And I figured it was kind of a nice, like, sort of ties in well with the Iron Warrior, because they're both, like, sword and sorcery style movies, and I'm sure you'll end up having to watch Damsel at some point, but...
I was going to watch it anyway, since it was, like, something that came out, and I like her generally. Like, I like those, like, Sherlock Holmes, like, what, Enola?
Yeah. Enola.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was trash, man. Like, I absolutely, I don't know. I did not enjoy that movie at all. It's got one of the worst dragon designs. It's just too much is going on the dragon. Like, you can barely even tell what you're looking at half the time, because it's just all like...
I don't know anything. So all I know is that it came out. I read one sentence. Brandy watched it and told me and said that she thought it was okay overall. Like, that's all I know. Like, I don't know shit about this movie. So I don't know what's going on with the dragon. I don't know shit. All
right. So at one point, the king and his men murdered a bunch of baby dragons and struck a deal with the dragon mother, that they would basically sacrifice their daughters to her in order for her to not murder the king and his men, right? That's the premise.
Okay.
You don't find that out, that's the premise, until like the end of the movie, so I've kind of just spoiled like half the movie, but if you have any intelligence, like, you figure it out in the first 15 minutes. So Millie Bobby Brown and her sister are princesses that live in this, like, poor, I don't know, utilitarian country or something, I guess.
Okay.
And they strike a deal where Millie Bobby Brown is going to marry the prince from the dragon country, although they don't know it's the dragon country, to unite those two kingdoms. So they go, they get married. She kind of falls in love with them. They have this ceremony up on the mountain, where, like, they become blood brothers, kind of. Like, he cuts his hand and she cuts her hand, and they push them together. So their blood is mingled. And then as he's carrying her over the threshold, he basically throws her off this bridge into this ravine. And that's where the dragon is going to kill her. So then there's about 20, 30 minutes of movie where it's her, like, surviving different attacks from the dragon. And some of that stuff is okay, I guess. But the entire time, I was sitting there watching it thinking, like, you know that you've been tricked just tell this fucking dragon he's trying to kill you. Because there's plenty of times where the dragon's talking to her where she can talk back.
Oh, the dragon talks? Okay.
Oh, yeah. The dragon, like, never shuts the fuck up. The dragon's always like, I'm coming to get you. Fuck, what is Barbara? Her name? Eolin or something like that? Eolin? I can't remember. It's a terrible name. Coming to get you, Eolin. So, like, her dad comes back to rescue her. And then you find out that they've been doing it for, like, years, like, killing these girls. Mm. Which their son is only 17, so I don't know, like, how that's happened. But there's all kinds of, like, corpses down there. These, like, girls that have died to, like, protect the king. And so, of course, like, she becomes this fucking, like, combat badass where she's able to clamber up things and I don't know, whatever. And in the end, her father sacrifices himself to save her, and then she ends up like fighting the dragon. Like, she takes the dragon's eye and she guts it, and the dragon's dying, and that's when she tells her like what the deal is, that oh, the reason the dragon wants to kill these girls is because when they mingle the blood, now the girls have royal blood. So she can smell, like, the king's lineage in them. And she thinks that they're the king's daughters. So the dragon's being tricked into murdering these girls because she thinks that they're related to the king, even though they're just related by marriage at that point. So there's this deus ex machina shit where there's these, like, silkworms that if you're wounded and they touch your wound, like, you're healed automatically, like, almost instantly. It's like some Wolverine shit.
Right.
But she couldn't use that on her dad, but she uses it on the dragon, and she heals the dragon. And then her and the dragon go back to the kingdom, and they basically, like, incinerate the evil queen and the prince, and...
Does she ride the dragon?
No, because that would be, what's the word I'm looking for? You got to respect the dragon. You don't want to, like...
Dragon could have allowed it.
Yeah, but then... So anyway, so then the dragon comes back with them, and they go back to their kingdom. Angela Bassett's her stepmother. She survives, but the father doesn't.
Hmm.
So...
Ray Winston just keeps knocking them out, doesn't he?
Yeah. I mean... Is it, like, the worst movie? No. But there's a lot of really stupid shit that happens in it.
Sure.
And again, there's a lot of, like, lame, like, deus ex machina stuff, where instead of, like, actually writing a real script, they just were like, oh, well, it's because of this thing.
How is she in it?
She's just herself. I don't know. She's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems really like I was just, like, scanning reviews, and it seems like a pretty, pretty common, like, consensus is that, like, she kind of, like, elevates it slightly from, like, a really bad script and bad effects, like, and that, like, basically it's like she's the only thing that kind of holds it together in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, she's fine. I don't think there's anything bad about her performance. I don't think that she saves the movie in any respect.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it's still just a really bad movie, even with, like, her performance in it.
Right.
I mean, I guess if you wanted to say it's because she's really the only thing happening, like, for a decent portion of the movie, you know, she's the only action, because it's her, like, just trying to survive and, like, clamber through this dragon's lair, but it's, like, so poorly plotted, and I don't
know. Yeah.
I just wasn't impressed. Mm-hmm. And again, there was, like, the little things, like, the healing worms and stuff like that. It's like, well, fuck, like, no one else in the entire time has ever found these fucking healing worms, and they also glow, so she can put them in a sack so she can light her way. And then she's also got, like, healing. And the dragon didn't know? Like, she, like, fucked, like, this 15-year-old child, like, fucks up this, like, dragon who can breathe fire. Oh, and there's another thing. The dragon can breathe fire, but at one point there's these, like, stone formations that are curved like a seashell, kind of.
Okay.
And so she tricks the dragon into breathing fire at her in front of one of those things, and she dodges out of the way of this, like, huge blast of, like, molten death, and it hits the seashell and it curves back around and lands on the dragon, and it hurts the dragon.
Yeah.
Like, the dragon's flames that exist inside the dragon's body, and
right.
it can bring up at will. When it touches the outside, I don't know if that's it. Like, it just burns all its flesh away. So it's just a bunch of really stupid shit.
That is really dumb.
Yeah.
Is there a cover of Ring of Fire that is used in this movie?
Oh. Well, maybe. I wasn't paying attention at that point.
No. Okay. Because it just says the soundtrack includes a cover of Ring of Fire. And
maybe,
I was
maybe it's the end of the movie then.
Like the credits or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember hearing
it. I was going to say, I want to know if there was a like sequence in this movie that was set to a cover of Ring of Fire. Like,
yeah, I don't recall that.
Sure. Okay. All right. Well, that's good. Maybe it would be better if they tried to do that.
Yeah. I don't know. It would have been funny.
That's at least a one chagrin point, right? Is like,
yeah. I don't know, maybe two. I mean, I found it to be a six. Like, it's on the negative side of the chagrin scale.
Mm.
It's not like I don't know why I watched it, and I did not gain anything from watching it, I guess, is my
Yeah.
But I watched a worse movie this weekend too.
Mm.
If you want to talk about that.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's another one that I'm going to watch.
I know.
It's funny. You watched two movies that were like new this weekend now. And then I did too, but it wasn't the same movies.
I don't know. You have to tell me which two you watched.
Ricky Stenicki.
Oh, yeah. I've never watched that movie.
And then Marlo, which I told you that I watched.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've never watched that movie. Oh, yeah. You saved me.
Yeah. But you're not saving me, like, at least from this one you want to talk about here.
Yeah. So, I watched Wonka on Saturday night. I'm not sure why I thought it was a good idea to do that.
Uh-huh.
And it's not necessarily something. In fact, I would have told you that I had no desire to see it prior to, but it was there, and I was like, you know what? I really enjoy Willy Wonka, like the original. So mm-hmm. maybe this will be something. Maybe it won't be as bad as it looked in the trailers for the movie. And the funny thing is, it's probably worse than it looked in the trailers, because as much as trailers spoil things in the modern age, like, there's so much bad shit it couldn't have spoiled it all. You and I are not fans of Chamolet.
You know what? Let me like say this real quick, because like I don't like where he's like where Hollywood or whatever is taking him. I think he's perfectly serviceable in plenty of roles, like Little Women, like Lady Bird, like those like Gerwig movies. Like, I think he's good in, like, really good. Like, but he has certain roles, like, and I'll just say that I don't hate the kid, like, whatsoever. Like, I just think he's limited to certain roles.
Yeah, you know what? Because yeah, Lady Bird, exactly. I liked him in that.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a couple other things I've seen him in that I thought he was fine. But yeah.
And I think he's funny. I've seen some SNL skits that he did and stuff like that, like, years ago. It's like, I don't hate the kid. It's just that I think he's being, like, pushed down people's throats and miscast.
So the premise of fucking Wonka is that it's a prequel to his life, basically. It's the origin story for everything that you would have seen, like, since. He's an orphan. He's an idiot. He doesn't know how to like spend money or anything. He's in London, where he's going to start his chocolatier business just through his own pluck, but he can't read, so he signs a contract with this disreputable boarding house where he basically like gives up all of his rights and becomes an indentured servant for like room and board.
Mm-hmm.
But he still finds a way to sneak out. Like, it's fucking Screen Rant, barely an inconvenience, because he's able to sneak out every day to, like, sell his chocolate. But then there's three chocolatiers who, like, run the chocolate in London that want to kill Wonka. There's, I think it's supposed to be, like, a romantic subplot with this young girl that's also an indentured servant. She was an orphan, too. It felt like it was supposed to be romantic. I don't know for sure. It's got songs in it, and they're just the most forgettable, lame, like, musical numbers. Like, there's nothing... Like, I talked about Cats on the Spin Chagrin, and Lord, I've watched Cats, like, three times now, because there's genuinely... I mean, it's Andrew Lloyd Webber, so some of those songs, even if, like, they're ridiculous, like, they're not bad, you know what I mean? Like, there's some decent stuff there. And it's also written by T.S. Eliot, so there's, like, I guess a higher pedigree. The shit in Wonka, it's the most, like, banal, like, obvious bullshit. And then they bastardize the Come With Me and We'll Be, whatever that song is from the original. He's insufferable. Like, he waxes and wanes between just, like, melancholy and weird and, like, hyper, I don't know, gleeful. It's a really odd performance, and there's no real consistency to it. It's got this cast of characters that are also indentured servants that only exist to, like, basically make two scenes, like, have meaning. Everything's sepia toned, like,
oh really?
Yeah, I guess it's meant to make it feel, like, old, but it feels like the poor man's City of Lost Children or something. Like, I don't know. Like, I really hated looking at, like, the cinematography is just really awful and off-putting in it. And it's completely unnecessary. Like, why is that a story that's, like, needed to be told?
Right.
Like, no one is asking for this to happen. How poorly did it do at the box office?
Hold on, I just need to scroll down a little further here. It grossed $217 million. That's domestic. Worldwide, $625 million.
Maybe people are starved. Maybe people do want to see it. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. Let's see. In its second weekend, though, domestically, it finished second behind Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, which I still need to watch, because talk about a chagrin.
Another one that I'll watch at some point.
So, yeah, I guess it did fairly well. I don't know if I can see what the budget was. Budget was $125 million, so it did a decent... I mean, it did... Worldwide did a, you know, $500 million in profit. So they'll probably do another one. Figure out a way.
I don't know what their other one would be. Because he's... Oh my god, I forgot. So Hugh Grant is the Oompa Loompa. And nobody believes that the Oompa Loompas exist. Like, they all think that Wonka's crazy. And he does, like, the Oompa Loompa song several times. They make him really, really tiny.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess they didn't want anyone to mistake the fact that it was, like, an actual little person. Like, I guess they didn't want to, like, tie it to the idea that it was, like, little people in the original Willy Wonka.
Right.
So he's, like, maybe, like, 9 or 10 inches tall.
Right.
Yeah.
So, which... still wouldn't make any sense, right? I mean, do they explain, like, how that would take place in the original Willy Wonka?
No.
Right. So, cool.
That doesn't even matter, really. it's such a small part. Although it is, like, again, it's the Deus Ex Machina that saves Wonka, because at the end of the movie, him and Noodle, that's the name of his little sidekick, are drowning in chocolate, and it's the what's it called? The Oompa Loompa that saves them.
Yeah. I read somewhere where there's a scene where Wonka drops a gold coin into a and through a grate in it.
It's a silver sovereign.
Yeah, right. So to create a connection between what Charlie finds, I guess, in the original movie or something like that.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. I was not making any connections to anything else because it was so off-putting to me. I didn't want to relate the two things. But yeah, that makes sense. It also has, he carries this chocolate bar that his mother made for him. And he never opens it. And then at the end, he finally opens it, and it's got a golden ticket in it that basically tells him to believe in himself.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I'll hate this movie. I'm going to actually say something really controversial. I'm fine with Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I have no affection for that movie. Like, I don't have any, like a lot of people do, like, from childhood. Like, I don't think I saw it until I was, like, 8 or 9, honestly. And I don't care. Like, so, this actually might be low-key a Chris is a Bitch movie. Although, I guess I wouldn't be a bitch for disliking it.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, my mother was really big on musicals, so you know, we rented a lot of stuff that had musical elements to it. So I don't know how old I was when I saw Willy Wonka. I was probably 7 or 8 when I saw it for the first time, maybe a little younger, I don't know. But it was a big part of, like, she would sing the songs all the time and we would watch it together, so I have a lot of affection for it just from that respect.
Yeah, I've never admitted that, like, before. Like, if people are like, what's the movie that you... Oh, that's how you dealt for many years with Lord of the Rings, you said. Like, but it's, like, it's the same thing with, like, me with Willy Wonka. It's like, people talk about it, it's like, oh, I'm like, yeah,
That's fine, right?
But I just don't talk about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
I mean, not every movie's for...
You know what my Gene Wilder is?
I don't know, probably Running Scared or something like that.
What? He's not in that. That is Gregory Hines and Billy Crystal, man.
Oh, whatever.
And Jimmy Schmitz. No, the 86 horror, Haunted Honeymoon.
Haunted Honeymoon is a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy that movie. I wouldn't call it horror, but
it's a horror idea. It's horror comedy. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Counts.
Well, that's my journey this week.
What was your chagrin on that movie? Because I witnessed the last, felt like 5 hours, but, like 30 minutes or so of that? Like,
it's got to be an 8 or a 9.
Yeah.
I feel like 9 is, I mean, for all its flaws, it still is like a real movie, you know. It's, I mean, 9 and 10s are reserved for, like, the trashiest of trash.
Sure. The thing that wants to be a real movie and is not anywhere close to a real movie and is terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say it's an 8.
Yeah, still, like, observing you watching part of a movie that has high chagrin was, like, you know, like, it is, it's funny. I mean, to some degree, like, just so the viewers understand, it is, like, there's a lot of, like, verbalness, like, you know, to Frank's reactions of, like, sitting there and, like, going, like, oh!
Yeah.
And, Jordan, oh my fucking God!
Jordan Peele is in it, and he plays, no, not Jordan Peele. Is he? Who is
No, it's his partner. It's Keegan-Michael Key. Yeah.
He's in it. And he plays the sheriff, the constable of London, who is a chocolate addict.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene where they talk about chocoholic monks, which is something I never thought I'd hear.
Mm.
But he's also a chocoholic. And he's getting bribed in chocolate from the evil chocolatiers. And they basically put him in a Nutty Professor style fat suit over the course of the movie.
Mm.
So by the end of the movie, he's like a giant and unable to get in and out of like cars and stuff. So they're using like his weight as a joke. At least they don't make any diabetes jokes there. But,
anyway. Man. Okay.
It's a bad movie.
Yeah, I'll watch. I still got to watch Aquaman. I am interested in watching Poor Things, though. That came out. But yeah,
I'm gonna watch sometime this week.
Yeah, if anybody hasn't was interested, I won't take long. Ricky Stenicki, I didn't know until I started watching it, like, and looked it up as a Farrelly Brothers movie. So. Take that for what you will. Like, it ends up having like a lot of like crass, like obnoxious humor, like throughout it at times. Even though it's like trying to be like a little more like representative, like and stuff like that. Like, but it, like, so that shit's really grating. It's way too long. It's like 2 hours long, and that's way too long for a comedy, really. The only positive out of that is it really shows me that John Cena has legs as a performer. Like, it's been proven to me like time and time again to some degree, but, and this isn't just me randomly shitting on Dwayne. In terms of range, Cena has better range that I've seen so far than The Rock does. And he's still limited in what he'll be able to do, but in terms of comedy, I think he's better overall, in terms of the different types of comedy I've seen him do so far. And I think dramatic, like small dramatic stuff, like in Peacemaker and stuff, I think he's better. And I think he proved that here, and he's the best piece of that movie. Overall, if they would have taken the crassness down and made it like an hour and like, you know, hour 35, like it would have been a fine movie, like from a story standpoint, but it was just too much. The entire movie.
What do you think about him presenting best costume design nude?
I thought that was funny. I mean, like it's a funny joke. Marlowe, which is the Liam Neeson movie that is not adapted from Chandler at all, he's playing Philip Marlowe, is completely cliched, with the exception of maybe one character in it that is played by the guy that played Echo on Lost and Adebisi on Oz, and I just don't want to butcher the man's name, but that character was like somewhat unique to the film noir genre and had a couple good lines in it and a couple good scenes, but I think it was elevated by the actor and not necessarily like the script overall. But overall, like, just like a dreadfully boring, dull movie with Neeson and Jessica Lange and a bunch of other people, Alan Cummings, just phoning in their fucking, and wait, Ray Winston, like just phoning in their fucking performances. Or is that Ray Winston? No, Danny, what's his name?
I don't know.
We just watched him. He's the priest in the horror movie that I wasn't a fan of as much as you were.
The one with the girl?
Yeah.
Consecration?
Yes. That gives me a place to start. What's his name? Danny Houston. That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, Danny Houston phones it in too. Overall, just playing like a character that he's played a million times before. But yeah, definitely not worth watching. Also, like, you know, just over 2 hours or something like that, and not enough happening to satisfy those 2 hours. So both of those, if you're a fan of the Farrelly brothers, like, then I would definitely watch Ricky Stenicki. If you're not, like, I would probably avoid it unless, like, you like John Cena or something like that, or are curious. But Marlo is a pass if you're, like, a crime fan. Like, I just did not think it was good at all. Those are my two movies that I watched this week that are new.
All kinds of chagrin happening.
There's a lot of chagrin.
From the least chagrin to the most chagrin.
Yes. You want to see what you get next week for chagrin?
Yeah, I'm interested.
All right, let's go ahead and share. Let's shoot. The category for next week is let's shoot. That's something you said, man. I wrote it down.
Were we doing like shoot conversations about something in real life?
Unknown. I feel like you said the phrase let's shoot, and I sat there and, like I do most of the time, it's like, just hold on a second, like real quick, like, you know, or I was listening back to something and I heard you say let's shoot. So wide open, there's all kinds of shooting that you could do.
Oh yeah, I could watch 100 movies. It's funny that that's the category, because I just queued two up today on my potential chagrin list on Tubi that actually perfectly
they have Shoot Fighters?
No.
Oh.
I could watch Shoot Fighter. I've never watched it.
You could. You could. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could technically watch a movie where somebody goes in the business for themselves.
It's true. I should watch a Hogan movie.
Oh, that's right. We need to talk about that after this.
I just watched No Holds Barred again.
Yep. Did research on that. We have not discussed No Holds Barred. We must have talked about it briefly, but it's like not a featured. We've never featured it on the podcast.
So I just watched it for no fucking reason.
I guess. Yeah, I think you did.
I was giving myself chagrin before chagrin was needed to be given.
Yes. Hold on a second. Okay. So you did one. I know I didn't have a lot to talk about after the podcast because then you had a journey, but there was a passing this week that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, pretty substantial one in the world of anime and manga and video games, I guess, and just in general. Akira Toriyama passed away. He's the creator of Dragon Ball, but also the character designer behind Chrono Trigger, one of my favorite video games of all time. The Dragon Warrior Dragon Quest series of games, he did the character designs for that. A lesser known Xbox RPG called Blue Dragon, which is one of my favorite games of like that console generation. I was never a huge Dragon Ball fan. Like, I know that Bledsoe and Orion, like our friends, were really big into it. I watched Z, I guess, and some of the other spinoff Dragon Ball shows on Cartoon Network once in a while, but it wasn't something I was like obsessed with. But you know, a really, really unique artist that I think, hugely responsible for a lot of like pop culture, iconography, I guess, in the last like 40 years of our lives. Mm-hmm. So sad to see him die.
Yeah. The only thing I'm familiar with really is Dragon Ball out of any of that. I guess I've maybe seen people play Chrono Trigger, but And what was he? Was he just responsible for the artwork when it comes to
Dragon Quest?
Yeah, Dragon Ball. Yeah.
Dragon Ball is his thing. Dragon yeah. Quest.
But he was like the manga writer, like the artist for that, right? And yes. The writer.
Yeah, I okay. think he wrote them.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm not. I mean, for as big of an anime period as I had, Dragon Ball was not like really a part of that. But the Dragon Quest games, Dragon Warrior or whatever in the US, I love those games. I played, I guess I haven't played all of them. I played most of them. But that's one of my favorite parts of them is like, I remember seeing the Nintendo Power with like his illustrations and it just, like his style just kind of captures your imagination and it's got this nice mix of whimsy and coolness, I guess. I don't know. Like it's good. But yeah. So sad passing there.
Yeah.
There's some other stuff. There were some other things when I was looking him up. That I had forgotten that he had been responsible for. I guess we could have talked about this last week because he died on March 1st.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was that long ago already? Jeez. That's crazy.
What's today? The 11th or something?
Yeah. Yeah, that might have been last Sunday that, or something like that. The first, so now Friday, crazy. Yeah, that doesn't seem like that long ago.
It's mostly Dragon Ball in this manga called Dr. Slump that our friend Chuck read. And then the video games that I mentioned. So rest in peace, I suppose.
That was actually a question about like comics that came up in the group that recently, like about like newer comics or whatever. Are you still like reading newer comics ever at all?
Yeah. I read a series called Monstrous, which was pretty good. Kind of like a like dark fantasy action comic, like a cult action. I'm currently reading the Image runs of the G.I. Joe and Transformers stuff because they've mixed those two universes together. And they're doing some really cool stuff with like the G.I. Joe universe, really, and they're pretty well written. So I'm reading them and those are new. I think that's it in terms of like new stuff. I think about picking stuff up sometimes, and I'll pick up one-shots. Like, I read somebody did an Ed Gein comic last year. It was like a graphic novel, like one-shot thing that was really good. There was that one that I gave you to read about the Green River Killer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That I thought was really good.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I try and get into it sometimes. I don't know that I can ever get back into reading, like, Marvel and DC continuity because it's, there's just too much to it. But, you know, like, I look for, like, the independent stuff. And, like I said, like, I'm really enjoying, I actually think the Transformers comic that I read is, one of my favorite comics I've read in, like, a number of years. Like, I was really impressed.
Yeah.
With the characterization and just the way it was written. Like, it's a good take on that, which is kind of like the G1 Transformer designs and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the stuff that most people from our generation would be used to. I would recommend those. The only problem with collecting comics now is like, there's not really any easy way to do it, I guess. Like, I was looking for comic subscription services because that's what I really thought about doing was, just subscribing to like maybe 4 or 5 comics a month, you know, spending like $30 or whatever.
Sure.
And then just changing them up. But I haven't found any subscription services that seem like super reputable. I really hate. I've tried Comixology before, mm-hmm. which is the Amazon's digital comic subscription service, and I really don't like reading comics on like my phone or a tablet or anything. Like, I find it to be kind of antithetical to the enjoyment of actually reading a comic. So I guess really what I'm reduced to is either buying them off eBay or Amazon and then waiting. Or, I mean, I guess I could go to Blue Hen, but I don't really want to do that.
Right.
Or just waiting until they collect them in trades and then just buy the trade.
Mm-hmm.
Which is honestly the less expensive way of doing it anyway. But
yeah.
But yeah, there's it's Duke 1-3, Transformers and Cobra Commander are the ones that I've read so far, and they're all pretty good. Cobra Commander actually legitimizes the Cobra Law stuff from the G.I. Joe movie, but makes it kind of cool, I guess. I don't know. Like, it's not like this weird sci-fi thing that they injected in, like, and they make Cobra Commander a pretty interesting character in it, so
mm-hmm.
I'm excited to keep reading that one more than any of them. I think that and the Transformers one.
Yeah.
The Duke one is fine, but I'm not a huge fan of the artwork in the Duke one, so that's going to take some.
So has inflation hit comics at all, like, in any way? Like, how much are comics, like, an issue now?
You know, I thought that it would, but not really. Like, right. I was looking at comic prices from, because I buy comics every couple of months. Like, I'll pick up a run for super cheap off eBay of, like, 15 to 20 issues of a comic that I either have always wanted to read or that I remember reading. And I'm actually surprised at the time period the comics were, like, up to like $2 to $3 each, or $3.50, or in some cases $4.95. I actually have no idea how much these modern ones cost me. Yeah, so issue number one of Duke was $4.99.
Okay.
So that's not a huge inflation.
Right. So it's up like a dollar maybe or something? Like overall?
Yeah, maybe $1.50 at most.
Yeah.
But there was definitely comics in the 90s that were, you know, $4, $4.50.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they had, like, special covers or there was something about them. So.
Yeah. So, I guess, I mean, we don't need to spend any time on it at all, and I don't even think you care, but as a movie podcast, we'd probably be remiss without at least, like, mentioning briefly the Oscars. Not a lot to mention, considering, like, Oppenheimer basically won most everything. Do you think you'll ever actually get around to watching that? Ever?
Yeah, I'm going to watch it this weekend, I think.
Yeah.
I keep saying I'm not going to watch it, but, I mean, I really wanted to see it before it came out, and I actually was super into the story of Oppenheimer as a person for a long time, like way before the movie was announced.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of fascinated with him. I don't know if you remember that, like a decade ago. Like, I was reading a lot about him and just really into it. So, I mean, I'm curious. I don't know. I like Cillian Murphy, and it looks like a good performance. And
it is. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that movie, like, necessarily. I know I texted you. I can't remember what year I said, because I just made up a year, but it just feels like it was, like, the best film of, like, a 1970, like, somewhere in the 70s. Like, you know, I mean, it just doesn't feel, like, current to me. It just feels like a throwback, which is fine. I mean, it's just it was a good movie. I mean, a great movie, maybe even. I don't know if I understand all the hoopla, but it was a solid movie, especially 3 hours. I even thought it was fairly paced well for that runtime. So it's a good movie. I'm interested in seeing Poor Things. I know I haven't seen that. Emma Stone won for Best Actress. Divine Joy Randolph won for The Holdovers, and I think The Holdovers is the guy that did Alexander Payne or whatever. I think,
yeah.
And I don't have any interest in his movies.
That's
usually
pre Hulu or Peacock. One of those two. It's free.
Oh, it wasn't? Okay.
Yeah. I almost watched it the other day, but then I didn't care.
Oh, that's the other thing I need to watch is Mean Girls is now on Paramount Plus. That was the seventh thing that came out this weekend.
Yeah, I did see that.
Miyazaki, the boy and the heron, I'll watch at some point when I can.
Yeah. I heard it was really good.
American Fiction won Best Adapted Screenplay. I was already planning on watching that.
I don't care about that movie.
American Fiction?
Yeah, it doesn't look interesting to me at all.
You are a forgetful and complex man, sir.
Why did I say I wanted to see it?
Yes, you absolutely like said that you wanted to see it, like, and you were very like, you know, you were like, oh yeah, that looks really good.
I've seen more from it, and I don't think it looks that great anymore. I'm just not interested. So, gotcha.
The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, which is not something you would enjoy whatsoever, won the best like live action short. That's the Wes Anderson stuff that came out on Netflix earlier this year. I watched one of them. It was fine. No, I watched two of them. One was good. One was fine. I didn't watch the other ones at all. Anything else here? Like, I guess, yeah, pretty much everything else is like dominated. Godzilla Minus One, which I know you'll watch. Won best visual effects. Zone of Interest, won a couple of
really
awards.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that.
Isn't that about like Holocaust stuff?
It's about a Nazi commandant who's running a concentration camp. And like his life.
Yeah.
Apparently, it doesn't do anything like inside the concentration camp or anything like that.
Mm.
Like it's about like the banality.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I remember you telling me about this now.
I guess it it sounds pretty interesting to me.
Yeah, I can't with anything during that time period anymore. It's not interesting to me. Jonathan Glazer. Why do I know that guy?
You know Jonathan Glazer. We just talked about him.
What?
I don't remember why.
Under the Skin. I've never seen them. Birth.
Yeah.
Oh, that's that weird ass movie.
Under the Skin is too.
I remember Birth coming out, but I never saw one. Oh, Danny Houston's in Birth too. So I mean, not a lot to talk about, like in terms of the Oscars. Like it's just, you know, Oppenheimer like dominating everything largely. See what happens next year. But all right. Anything else you want to talk about, Brent?
Nah, that's it. Fighting a cold, so I kind of want to just take some medicine, get some sleep.
All right. We will be back next week with Let's Shoot.
Let's Shoot.
And you know what? I'm going to shoot next week.
What are you going to shoot on?
I don't know.
Well, I guess I'm ready for it or not.
I'm going to find a way to shoot though.
All right.
So.
Well, shoot your shot. We'll see how it goes.
There's actually a category that's kind of about that. About shooting your shot. All right. So thanks for listening, everybody. Have a good week.
Deuces.